Hey, everybody. Dave Hodges here, host of The Common Sense Show. We are the show that is freeing America, one enslaved mind at a time. Thank you so much for joining us. Always great to be with you. And I got to tell you, we got some hot topics coming up because America is a nation in transition, and we're a nation facing an election I think is the most important in American history. I agree with Steve Bannon when he says that. I don't agree with Steve on everything, but he is right about this. And this is critical election time, critical time in our economy, critical time across the board in just about every aspect of our lives. And to unravel a lot of this stuff for us and help us make sense of it on a holistic basis is Robert Kudla. And Robert Kudla has an organization called Trade Genius, and they've been helping people make money for years in the market, even when the market's bad, because they thrive in volatility. And he brings his insight to the economy and to things like the market to our audience here, and that's what we're going to do today. Bob, welcome to the show. Glad you could join us. And if we would have known before the pandemic where things were going, do you think any of us would have believed this?
You know, it's hard to say, but, you know, I think the pandemic probably taught us we should believe anything anymore.
Yeah, I know. Got to be careful with that one, though.
Yeah. So, well, I mean, economically, don't worry about your.
Yeah, I know. I hear you. Yeah. The forbidden topics that you're not allowed to discuss because we don't own the science. Okay.
Yeah. So, but where we are here is, you know, if you look at it from a pure economic standpoint, is that the central banks around the world, whether they did it accidentally or on purpose, took economies that were running hot from a fiscal standpoint and basically just threw gasoline onto a bonfire. And then now they're trying to, like, if I can mix my metaphors here, they're trying to put a lithium fire out with water right now.
I like that. You're going with that comment. That's a good one.
And so they're kind of screwed. And we've talked about this before over the many years, is that the Fed is really good at able to destroy demand on what's called discretionary and speculative activities. Mm-hmm. But they absolutely are powerless to stop demand that's not discretionary, that, you know, demand that is vital. And what I mean by that is that if you look at the four horsemen of economic apocalypse, right? It's food prices, energy prices, housing prices, and medical prices. I'm going to add a fifth one in there because you're also getting inflation and taxation too. I'll explain that in a minute. And so now the Fed is in their infinite wisdom. They basically have a hammer. And they just start whacking away, trying to destroy demand or try to make the cost of capital so high that people will retreat from speculation, and also then, you know, kill demand. Like, and so if your wealth is going down, you may not take that vacation. Well, the problem they have is what happened with the pandemic. Is that the response was that supply got curtailed around the world. Now, if you think about it, is that China basically curtailed supply of all the things that you need from China, right? It became extremely in short supply, right? So Europe is experiencing a shortfall in energy, and the United States is causing a shortfall in the dollar by choking off the dollar. And so, but around the world is that you have this knock-on effect from energy, you know, and, you know, you can blame Russia all you want, but the Biden administration and the Europeans started this way beforehand in terms of their woke policies around don't let banks invest in fossil fuels, like governors of New York and Pennsylvania curtailing natural gas development, the Biden administration cutting off pipelines, making it impossible for you to do exploration. California taxes any fossil fuel they can get their hand on in any stage of exploration all the way down to retail. And then they're shocked. They're shocked that the price of energy has gone higher. And then, of course, they blame the people that they're the ones actually trying to destroy by not providing enough supply. Well, the Fed can't fix that. You know, I said a long time ago, the Federal Reserve, central banks around the world are going to end when they can't, because they can't print food and they can't print energy. And so when you have high energy costs, it's a knock-on effect, because as you can see what's happening in Europe is that your nitrogen, it comes from ammonia. Ammonia comes from natural gas. Natural gas is too expensive. Russia controls a vast majority, and not just Russia, but what I would call that Western Eurasian area controls, like Belarus and Kazakhstan, and Russia control a lot of the marginal ag chem, which is basically the phosphorus and the potash around the world. And that makes raising crops more expensive, or yields fall. So that you have food issues. And then because of all the speculation they allowed with the pandemic response by just pumping money into the system, is that, and then also the NIMBY rules around building new properties, is that you had a housing shortage. And then finally, demographics are telling us medical costs are going to go higher. But there's one unknown out there that people aren't really realizing is taxation. So because we created this inflationary environment, is that taxation around the world, because it's progressive, it's gone up. So if you made $90,000 this year, now you're making $95,000 next year, because the response to inflation is people demanding higher wages. Well, you're I'll make this math simpler. You go from 100 to 105,000, your wages increased by 5,000. But did your net pay increase by 5,000? No, because you're in a higher tax bracket now. And it really, really affects the people on the lower middle class spectrum, because that's where they get the biggest jumps in their marginal rate tax increase. But also they start losing out on credits. So, out here in California, people are begging their employers not to increase their hours, because you lose housing support, you lose food stamp support, you lose, different credits for childcare. And then also the medical cost credits that you get through the Obamacare. So all that starts working against you, and those are all good guys for the government. That's why I said, don't believe Biden and those guys when they say, oh, they want inflation under control. They absolutely do not. They want higher revenue coming in. You saw it. That last year, we have had the most revenue come into the Treasury ever. But the government is spending now 67% of all GDP. And so we're just basically caught in this loop. And so the Fed can't fix any of that, no matter how hard they try. And, and you hear these things about, oh, they're going to kill employment. Well, you can't. People are retiring. So companies have to have some employees. They can't operate, with all robots, no matter, what people think is going to happen. There is a basically an irreducible amount of employment required for a functioning economy. And so you can't. So people will keep the employees. The margins will fall in their businesses, but at some point they can't fire people, right? So because then they won't have a functioning business. So the Fed's trapped. So they're this inflation thing that's going on, Dave, right now is really a false premise that they're trying to solve inflation. Okay, so. So we're going to have higher costs, and we're in a loop now. So they're going to keep raising rates and higher costs, raising rates, higher costs. But last week they hit a wall. It was called England and European pension funds. And so now, and then also the other thing too is that our Treasury now is supporting the Federal Reserve. Federal Reserve now used to be a moneymaker for the Treasury. Now it's actually a deficit. And so we're paying almost $100 billion now a year to the banks not to lend money. And they're keeping their cash with the Federal Reserve, and they're getting paid 3.05% of over $2.4 trillion of reverse repos.
Is that, let me ask a question on this, Bob. Is that akin to raising interest rates, what they're doing, but without really raising interest rates as much as the benefit they're getting?
That's different. They're raising interest rates and they're raising the reserve rate they pay on the for the
Okay,
banks.
I got it.
Yeah, so what you're thinking of when they reduce the balance sheet, it kind of has an indirect effect of raising rates on the long side of the curve. And then when they raise interest rates through their open market activities, that raises rates on the short end of the curve. And what I mean by the curve is I'm talking about from, one day treasury bill all the way out to 30-year treasury bond. Okay. So they affect the long end of the curve by doing a quantitative tightening, which makes the long end of the bond market sell off, which we've been seeing. And then when they raise interest rates, it makes the short end of the bond market go higher. They like to have what's called a positive slope, Dave, so that the banks can make money. They call it borrowing short, right, and lending long. They always want to be borrowing money at a lower interest rate than they're lending it out, obviously, right? That's banking. And but what's happening to them is that the curve flipped. So there's not demand for these long-dated bonds out there by customers because when you run scared, you're not going to take a big old loan out, right? And so the bond market's what's called inverted. And so when the short rate is higher than the long rate, the banking basically goes bankrupt. So what they've done in the past is they've created this cash liquidity for the banks. The banks shove cash into the bank's balance sheets. And then the banks, instead of lending that money out, they turn right around. They just give it back to the Federal Reserve. Federal Reserve pays interest on it. So when you're raising these interest rates up, and then they don't give you the same rate they get, obviously. And so they're sitting on $2.4 trillion in the banking system that's not being lent out, which is by design. The Federal Reserve doesn't want them to lend it out. And they're paying the banks basically 3.05% annualized to just have that money sitting there. I mean, it's good work if you can get it.
Oh
That's like nearly $90 billion, right?
yeah.
Of
And then Bob, add to the fact that you got fractional reserve banking, so they can loan out about nine times more than is actually there.
right, but that's why they do the reverse repos, Dave, because they don't want them to be lending it out.
I see. Yeah, exactly. You're exactly right.
So
Man, oh
it's
man, oh man. You
bank,
really
yeah.
encapsulated this. So, well, let me ask you a question because I want to go back to this theme, but I'm interested to how you apply this to Trade Genius. So what lessons do you take? Because for businessmen listening here, whether they're investment or commodities, whatever they are, how do you take this info and use it yourself?
Oh, quite simply. So we have an algorithm that looks at what's called the Fed liquidity indicator. So the Fed has obviously, are they increasing or decreasing their assets? Are they increasing and decreasing the level of what's called reverse repo? Okay. And are they increasing or are they decreasing the interest rates on the short end? And so we've been in a what's called a risk off since the beginning of September. September is typically a down month. And so we've been short the market, but we've been long energy. Okay. And that's been paying us. And so, we look for opportunities to you buy companies like SARK, which is a short fund around technology. We buy SDS, which is a double short of the SPY. We'll go directly in and buy puts, and we'll do those kind of things. But at the same time, the money is not necessarily leaving the system; it's just moving over to energy because at the same time, our government policies around the world are enabling countries like Russia and Iran and Saudi Arabia et al. To raise the price of energy. And so why fight it? Own it. And so and it's across the board. So you can make money in coal, natural gas, uranium, propane, and natural gas if I missed it. And then also the people who ship those things. Companies, bulk shipping companies ship coal, bulk shipping companies ship and liquefied natural gas. Those shippers pay really good dividends, so we've been in those. And so you know, the other thing too, when you go into the fall, is food prices go up, the grains go up, and that's been happening too. So that's where we've been focusing. You know, I feel bad about what's happening in the world, but I have to make money, and that's where my focus is.
No, I hear you, and you're doing well, because these people send us these attaboys here. Here's what a couple of things people are saying. This system rocks, talking about Trade Genius. This is great. Definitely renewing for another year. Incredible tools, all thanks to the people at Trade Genius. So obviously what you're doing is working. But what I heard you say, if I could encapsulate this, is that no matter what the market's doing, there's an opportunity somewhere, and your job is to seek that out. And I think that's good advice for everybody.
Yeah, look, I don't want to just say everybody listening is that there's always a bull market somewhere. And the Fed is at a point now where they won't tell you they're going to pivot, but they're going to be forced to pivot. Every other central bank around the world except the United States and Russia are starting to add liquidity into the system. Stock market valuation is almost one-to-one tied for what's called the world central bank assets. Okay? And so you have now Bank of Japan never stopped QE. Bank of England just started QE last week because they had to protect their bond market. European Union never stopped QE because Europe's a failed experiment and nobody would buy their bonds if they didn't pay by them themselves. And then obviously Russia doesn't need the money because they're running a surplus. And the United States is trying to destroy any competitor to the dollar hegemony. And so they're just still driving forward on QT. But with the bond market inverting, with yields pushing up over 4.5%, with the real estate market imploding, and with the what I mean by real estate imploding, real estate activity imploding, and you have the now the Treasury on the hook for Fed losses, is that there's going to be absolutely incredible political pressure on Jerome Powell to at least pause. And my view is that, you know, Powell's a rock rib Republican. I think he's trying to break this. I think he's trying to break this this narrative by the Democrats to you can spend any money you want.
Yeah,
I think he's trying to make it painful for them. And I think once this election happens, and if we do have some sort of red wave or red high tide, then you're going to have Powell feel like the Congress is now not one-sided, and he'll probably relent. But it doesn't matter. We're going to go into recession, and then you just buy bonds. Just buy Treasury bonds, and you'll make a fortune in the next 12 months.
Treasury bonds. Okay, that's going to be something to keep in mind. But you just said we're going to go into a recession. The definition of recession, if I'm correct in my economics class, is that it's two consecutive quarters of negative GDP. We've already achieved that.
Yeah, so let me explain. There's recession and then there's recession. Okay, so we have a technical recession primarily because of inventories and import-export. Okay, but economic activity is still hovering right on the brink. But the problem we have this time is, you know what a real definition of recession is, Dave, right?
Yeah.
When somebody you know loses their job.
Yeah.
Okay, I don't know anybody who's lost their job. Nobody. And so I know people who retired, but they got a pension. So to me, when I say going into a recession, to me, that's a definition of recession. What you described is absolutely the textbook version of recession. In fact, we're going to have three quarters come December. Yep. of technical recession. But until you start seeing people lose their jobs en masse, okay, it's really not a recession from the boots on the ground kind of environment.
Okay.
I don't want to argue with, but I say that because that's what I look at. I look at economic activity, I know I live in a bubble where I live, but everybody has a job. Okay. Everybody's making good money. Everybody's going out to eat, the malls aren't closing down. You know, you just start seeing the here and there things, but at some point in 2023, the dam will break just because people just aren't going to have the money and they're going to pull back from investing into the future of the country. And then companies will start pulling back people.
And that means unemployment, correct?
Debbie's unemployment.
Yeah. Well, I'm seeing that in a print, and I don't really trust a lot I read in the mainstream media, but if you believe the box stores and the Fortune 500 companies, this could be a really weak Christmas retail season combined with layoffs. In fact, I'm hearing that the CEOs are going to lay off the remote workers first. Do you have any insight to that?
Yeah, I heard that too. You know, you can lay off, they're going to lay off until they reach what's called vital people. But, you know, not everybody vital is sitting in an office too. So it all depends what industry you're in. Here's the way I look at it. If you're in a business that you sell nice to have stuff or services, you're at risk. If you're in an industry that you sell a product or service in a vital, what I mean by vital meaning is that there is a people need it. It's a staple versus a discretionary.
Okay.
And when I mean by staple, I'm not talking about buying diapers kind of thing. I'm talking about, you know, if you're in the energy space, you're probably okay. If you're in the food space, food production space, you're okay. If you're a farmer, you're okay. But, you know, but if you're selling camping gear, right, or you are a massage therapist, or, you know, you're doing a lot of vacation stuff and, you know, those kind of things, you're a dentist, you know, believe it or not, people think dentist is a vital service. Dentistry, absolutely not. If you can't afford to go to the dentist, you can skip it for 3 months. Your teeth aren't going to fall out, right? So those kind of, you look at those kind of businesses that are going to be the ones that are going to lose people. Okay, restaurants. I think restaurants run a big risk going forward. It's too expensive for most people to eat out anymore. And I think you're going to start seeing, a lot of risk and pain in that environment, especially the highest end's fine, but it's that middle tier that's going to get blown up. It's going to be the pizza joint and the taco joint, you know, and the Chinese joint will probably be okay, but it's going to be these chains that are like PF Chang's or stuff like that. You know, people aren't going to go out to eat Chinese food for $100, $150 for the family, right? You're getting, you know, plain old, you know, chopstick food, right? Those things are going to get blown up.
Wow. That's, and that'll greatly contribute to the recession, won't it? Because it's taken away service and jobs.
Yeah, and it's going to be location dependent. You know, P.F. Chang's not going to say we're going to cut one person out of every store. They're going to say, hey, we got leases up on these 16 stores that are underperforming. We just won't renew those leases.
Okay.
You're going to see that kind of stuff. That's what we're seeing out here in California. We're seeing what I call the here and theirs. You know, leases expire, empty storefront. Leases expire, empty storefront. And, you know, and I was talking to some guys in the commercial space that are brokers. And I have two really good friends that are in this world. I've been asking them. They said, look, you can't get a bank loan for any kind of new commercial space, period. You can't get a bank loan for any office space construction, period. Nobody's renting office space and nobody's renting commercial space except for one area. And I call it Class C space just to get it wrapped around my mind. That is like, you know, if you own a restaurant chain, you know, in a city and, you know, 30% of your business is DoorDash, well, you may close one of your Class A stores, right, that's underperforming at a high rental rate, and then you create a store in a very inexpensive part of town, and you basically, that's your kitchen, and you DoorDash everything out of there, okay? And you don't DoorDash out of your other stores, right. And then you shrink those footprints too, and so you're going to see, you'll see more of that kind of activity. The other thing that I was told, which is interesting, which is kind of smart, is you're going to see a lot of teardowns of these older commercial strips, and they're going to become multi-family housing.
You know what? And I don't mean to be sarcastic, and it'll come off that way, but I don't mean that. When you were talking about the abatement of retail, and what you just said now, makes me wonder if this is not where the government's going to stick a lot of, shall we say, immigrants?
They could try. You know, I think we're at peak immigration too now because, you're starting to see New York and D.C. and Chicago screaming, right? And, you know, if we go through this election and Republicans take over, they're not going to provide a nickel to these cities, okay? A nickel. And I think you're going to force Biden's hand. I understand that Carrie Lake, if she becomes governor, she's going to declare an invasion in Arizona.
That's correct, yes.
You live there, and she's going to shut that border down completely. And I think Abbott's going to win his thing. Remember they thought they said that Beto O'Rourke was going to beat Abbott?
No.
Abbott's beating him by 7 points now. So, maybe Abbott will grow a pair and declare an invasion in Texas, too, and shut that border down. And so I think we're at peak that right now. But the government's not going to get a penny for that stuff. Republicans take over, there'll be zero money for illegal immigrant housing, okay? They're going to force the pain into these cities. And so, but what I'm hearing is that you're seeing, and the thing is, there's enough multifamily housing for the higher end, right? It's just that there's not enough multifamily housing for, like, somebody like my daughter, right? She's 20, almost 22. She has a job. She wants to move out. The only choices she has is to get a $3,000 a month two-bedroom apartment, right? Or $3,500 a month three-bedroom apartment, you know, close to where she lives. You know, you can't, kids don't make enough money for that. And so they're going to have to figure out how to, I don't want to call it subsidize it. You get that land fairly cheap. You put on 20 units, whatever. You're going to start seeing more of that kind of infill that's going to happen that, that's my perspective, and the commercial brokers I'm talking to are intimating that as well.
Okay, so that does make a lot of sense to me, but we have at least 5 million immigrants here, and to say that they're just going to leave it to the cities, I mean, to me that doesn't seem fair to a place like Arizona that did not cause this to happen. This is totally the actions of the federal government. So,
yeah, Carrie Lake, she's going to chase them right out of Arizona, yeah. Dave. That's my point.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're right. But you wouldn't believe how the mainstream media here is turned on her. And she used to be one of them. She was the top newscaster in Phoenix for 2 decades. And her opponent will not debate her. Because I love her opponent, Katie Hobbs' campaign. She has a plan, but you never know what the hell the plan is.
They asked her to say nice things about Latinos, and she couldn't come up with anything.
Oh, yeah. I read that the other day. That's hilarious. Well, so people that are going to lose jobs are basically in the service industry. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I mean, there's going to be some manufacturing, but, you know, manufacturing is coming back on shore. But people have to realize service industry is 70% of the economy, right? So they're the ones at most at risk. I mean, look at Starbucks. You know, I think it's really interesting, you know, for people to understand is that there's an epiphany now happening in retail that, you know, it's automation and simplification. You got to look at Taco Bell and what Taco Bell's doing. Okay, Taco Bell is they're taking, you know, and also crime, right? So they still want to serve these communities because they can make money there, right? Because people get transfer payments in the city, they have to spend it, but they don't want to interact with these people. They don't want them to destroy their eating area. So they're just getting rid of the eating area. So Taco Bell is a concept where you pull into the into their restaurant underneath the restaurant. Like, and it's like, you remember banking of old with the pneumatic tubes?
You're kidding. You know? You're kidding. Yes. You're making that analogy to what Taco Bell is going to become?
That's what they're doing.
Wow. They're doing it already?
Yeah. They already have concepts out. So their restaurants, their kitchen's on the second floor. They have three lanes. Two of the lanes are you put your QR code up against the against a reader, and then it just drop the food right to you, and you already prepaid it. The third lane is where you order the food, and it drops in. Yeah, these are big, like pneumatic tubes. So they just have this the food ready for you. And it just drops right down. You just take your food and you leave. So there's no the people are totally protected. There's nobody there. Okay, you can't destroy their place. The footprint's smaller, right? And because they don't have seating, they don't have to the city's required to have so many parking spaces, right? So you basically cut out half your footprint. So your leases fall. And you're going to see this across the board. And you're going to see that. Yesterday I went to the grocery store, and I'm like, what the hell? Tide Pods are behind a a gate with a cage. You know, so like you're going to see more and more things that are going to be inaccessible for people just to pick up because they're allowing shoplifting. So eventually you're going to get to the point where you're going to – and Vons is already starting to do it. So they already cut – they took one of their stores and they moved the footprint and made it 75% of the last size. 25% of it is warehouse, nothing but pickups. And you're going to start seeing grocery stores do the same thing, especially in urban areas. You can't go into the store. You order it ahead of time, and they'll bring it to you. You already prepaid it. They're not going to let people touch the inventory unless it's paid.
Is that to cut down on the crime?
Yeah, cut down on crime, cut down on footprint, cut down on employees. You know, it's much more efficient.
Makes sense.
You know, and yeah, and look, and how does that affect me? Well, we own a company called SYM, called Symbotic, who is in the world leader in AI-enabled automation and warehouses. They already have Amazon as a client. They already have Walmart as a client. That stuff scales down. You'll see grocery stores that are – they're all going to be pick lists, right? Well, a robot's going to do the pick list. They're not going to send, you know, Jesse and George, right, running up and down aisles getting food at some point. It's going to all be like what they do at Trader Joe's. Trader Joe's doesn't sell anything by the pound. You notice that? Everything's prepackaged with a price, and it's all going to be pick list. And you just go ahead and you order your thing at home. You just drive up. You already prepay it. It's waiting for you, and you they'll tell you when it's available for pickup, or you can, you know, whatever they call it, DoorDash it out. And that's going to be the future of retailing. You know, we're going to lose experience because retailers have to cut down on labor cost, shrinking cost, and leasing costs. So, and when you get rid of employees, you get rid of medical costs. So that's how they're fighting inflation, right? And it's more efficient that way too. So they're going to save on energy as well. So fascinating times. We're forced into this because governments can't stop spending.
Exactly. Well, there's another factor though that I see in here too. This will help their ESG rating because their footprint for climate will be lowered. And so, therefore, they'll be falling under the good graces of BlackRock that hands out those ratings.
Yeah, well, yeah, except that they don't—they won't hire people.
Well, I know, but if your goal is to, let's say, be on the correct side of this movement, the green movement, then they have another. What I'm saying is, they just have another encouragement there to do what they're.
Oh yeah,
doing.
No, actually, I was just having fun with you.
I know, I know.
But look at Starbucks too. Starbucks is going cashless too. So they don't want, you know, and forget aside the moral and the spiritual implications of that. Look, you know, I have a business. I don't accept cash, right? I mean, I would, but I have no mechanism to do so, right? So so they don't want to take that cash to the bank. You know what I'm saying? And the other reason why they do it too, they won't need cashiers anymore. So, you know, if you run an operation where you pre-order, we went to Maui. I know I'm yakking away here, but we were in Maui on vacation. As you know, we did an interview there a couple weeks ago. So we went to a restaurant, and my daughter was so pissed. It was pretty funny because she's in the service business herself. So you go there, right? You don't get a menu. You have to order it yourself. You have to pay for it yourself. You know what I'm saying? And you just sit down at a table and the food just comes to you, right? And then, you know, they and you have to pre-tip, right? And my daughter says, screw that. She goes, no tip. You know, she said, you know, I have no idea if the food's going to be good. I don't know if the service is going to be good. You know, and I did all the work.
Exactly. That's the most stupid thing I ever heard of. You tip on service.
Yeah, I mean, the tipping thing was just an icing on the cake. I just laughed because my daughter, 30% of her income comes from tipping. She's a stylist, right? You know, and but her point is that people tip me because I go above and beyond what they expected. But there, it's just that, you know, they probably cut their labor cost in probably by 30 or 40%. All people do, they just walk around, clean the table, hand you water, and drop your food off. That's it. So, you know, you have one server that could probably service 10 or 12 tables versus one server working 4 or 5 tables, is my point. And, and when you go into the place, too, because it was a beer, a brew house, right? So the host checks your ID before you sit down. You get a wristband. So you know, that's another thing they just – so the point is that companies are looking for any way possible to just run as lean as they possibly can. And all that's going to do is just, you know, it's going to keep growth from happening. So from a pure fascination standpoint, it's amazing. So,
well, this stuff is it just turns the tables on what we've been used to. Let me ask you a question too, because we kind of skipped by this a little while ago. But you talked about how what's going on with inflation is the hidden tax. You ask for more money from your boss, but you never really catch up. So you get this bracket creep going on. Is this related at all to why there are 87,000 IRS agents that will soon be coming after us? What's the motivation there?
So there's two things. So I'm going to give the IRS the benefit of doubt for a minute. Okay, so I don't want to get into a big pejorative here. So when the pandemic hit, there was a lot of money given out, and a lot of it was stolen. So so I think the first thing that these IRS agents are going to do is going to do a recovery operation. Okay, there's people out there that, you know, there are people out there that filed in 6 different states, right? They don't have any employees, but they created false, fake documents, right? You know, Minnesota, they just arrested these people for stealing child nutrition money, a bunch of Somalis, right? So I think the first thing that they're going to do is they're going to try to recover. I mean, you're talking hundreds of billions of dollars here, Dave, of money that was simply stolen. And, you know, California, $100 billion of unemployment money was stolen. You know, it's amazing to me how incompetent the administration of our governments are, that this money can leak out like this with no checks and balances. And then the second thing they're going to do is the big thing isn't like you taking an extra deduction on your car, right? Okay, right. Oh, I reported 3,000 miles of travel, you know, that at my 57 cents, but you only did 1,000, right? IRS cares about that. You shouldn't do it. You need to be legal, right? But the point is, they're not going to send an IRS agent to try to track that down. There's no ROI on that. However, you know, with Venmo and Zelle and the banks and PayPal, there's a lot of people that haven't reported income at all, but the government knows that income exists because they have these now reporting agencies like the brokers in the past for stock market. So they're going to uncover a lot of income that's not reported. And you know, you're just going to get a notification from the IRS saying PayPal has said that your income was $2,900. You didn't report that on your tax return. So here's your assessment for the $2,900 plus a late fee and interest, right? And so that's how they're going to collect a lot of that money. You don't need IRS agents for that.
No, you don't. That's an AI function, Bob.
Yeah, so they're going to go after these people. And you know, then they're going to turn towards the they're going to chase down the LLCs and the S corps, right? But again, a lot of it's going to be around matching up income. You know, deductions are now, they're not going to chase your meal deduction, right? But they're going to chase down that, hey, you reported $1 million for your business, but your bank statement says it's $2 million. Well, an IRS agent has to sit there and review bank records, okay? So I think they're going after income first, Dave. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, the nefarious side, I'm sure you've already reported on it. It's a beautiful way in which you punish your political enemies, yes, or punish your political opponents. So,
well, there's precedent for that before.
Yeah, my view is that if Republicans take over, the IRS is not going to get funded to that extent, and there's going to be restrictions on them. So,
yeah, but here's the question I have. This what really greatly troubles me. I think everybody should pay their tax. My tax guy is a former IRS auditor, and that's intentional because I don't want to have trouble with the government. So I try to pay what I'm supposed to pay. Now, having said that, what really bothers me is how they've got 87,000 of them. They have to, their job ads originally said, learn to use a gun, trained, and you have to take a life if necessary. And I'm paraphrasing, but that's basically what the original job ad said from the federal government. Why are they training goons to collect our taxes?
Well, I mean, you know, I mean, that question to answer themselves. They're looking for a shock. You know, basically, they're looking for a military that's loyal to the government, not to the Constitution. And so that's what they do. Look, I mean, it's no different than PayPal the other day trying to do this misinformation, you know, clawback, right? It's no different than, you know, Munich Re saying we're not going to fund any more of fossil fuel endeavors. You know, it's just basically they're trying to outsource basically police functions to, you know, agencies that aren't police. So to run the will of the government. This is the last days of Caligula. You know that, right? So they're just trying.
I thought it was Nero.
Yeah, Caligula too. They're all the same thing. No, there was no last days of Nero. He just burned the place down immediately. So the government is becoming rapacious. They already are 67% of economic activity right now. And so they're not going to be satisfied until everything is taken or they get blown up. So we just have to see which one's going to happen.
I'm like, boy, that's the most thing you've said today. I totally agree with. I agree. They want 100%. They want it all.
Yeah.
They want it all.
Right.
I'm looking at some of the things people sent me about your organization. And I guess that what I have to wonder is if people want to make money, if they want to stay ahead of inflation, is your company a good viable alternative, or should people still be thinking in terms of second and third jobs?
Well, I mean, look, I don't think one has anything to do with the other. I'll speak to my company first. Our whole purpose of being is to keep you ahead of your expenses so that you can accumulate wealth. And so how we've done it at Trade Genius is I just referred to, we have a Fed liquidity indicator. We have what's called a volatility algorithm indicator. And then we have the indicators and algorithms that we look at, what's called price levels and price momentum. And we do that for the stock market. We do that for the crypto market. We do that for the futures options markets so that we have these tools that allow people to make good trades that they can stay ahead of the game to accumulate wealth responsibly. You know, we're not GameStop, AMC, Silver Guy, you know, that kind of crazy stuff. We're grinded every day. And then what we've done, Dave, is we've created 7 bundles for people to be able to trade in those areas: stocks, cryptos, options, futures, training, and or even just getting access to the indicators themselves. You can just buy them and not buy anything else as a service. So you can do those. They're pre-discounted 65% off. They're available to you on a discount till the 15th of October, I think is that Saturday. And then if you want to get anything that's in the store that's not bundled, you can use promo code, is it Columbus?
Yes, yeah, Columbus. And, that's what I'm looking at.
Right, and it's 40% off until the 15th as well. So you get from our service, you get access to the indicators, algorithms. You get access to chat rooms. You get access to training videos that we put together on how to trade and trade our way. And then I usually throw a trade or two out every day, kind of to prove the model, you know, because we're not financial advisors. We're really educators. And some people follow those trades. And I usually take them myself. And so that's a way in which you can see how you can make money, learn while you earn kind of approach.
Yeah, I'm looking at one of the things that someone sent to me here. And it says, thank you so much for the alerts, which I'm assuming is what you're talking about here, that this place is where you want to be in the market.
Yeah, you know, and I mean, we had, if I could just put the humble thing on the shelf for a minute, last couple of weeks, we changed some people's lives. I mean, we had one guy made $26,000. We had another guy who we were able to keep him from taking a second job. Okay. You know, and so we teach people how to responsibly do these things. You know, one guy, and I have to send you his attaboy. He wrote a letter, so it's too big just to throw it over as an email. But basically, he, he wanted to learn how to make $400 a day, and we gave him a training program to teach him how to basically the psychology of it. He just kept losing money, and that we gave an approach that, you know, you have to start making sure you prove your model first, right? Is your approach sound? So if you can make a little money consistently, then you can what's called up your risk, right? Because you know the model works, okay? And then you, now he's making consistently $300-$400 a day on a small account. I mean, his account's less than $15,000, okay? So you can do those kind of things, but you learn the rules and apply the discipline and be patient, you know, you can get to yourself to a point where, hey, you know, if you make $200 a day consistently in the stock market, Dave, you're making $40,000 a year. Few people know this. So everybody thinks you just have to be swinging like Babe Ruth, you know. But if you're just knocking singles and doubles out every day, you're going to be in good shape. And if you win 7 out of 10 times, you're considered masterclass, okay? So you don't even have to make money every day. You just have to, on average, make $300 to $400 a day. On average, over time, you're making $80,000 to $100,000 a year, Dave, okay? That's not chicken feed. And the reason why people can't do it is because people tend to get greedy, impatient. They let too much noise in. And our approach is simply, it's almost robotic, okay? It's not without joy. It's just that, hey, if the signal says to buy, our philosophy, you can ask people in my customers, see trade, take trade, okay? Take profit. If you're wrong, take loss and move on. Next trade. And you know, you don't sit there and agonize hoping it's going to be the big winner, because they don't come. Okay, I've been doing this a long, 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 long time. I can count on my one hand. Excuse me. I can count on my one hand days that I just knocked it absolutely out of the park. Though, because the market doesn't work that way. You know, either you got lucky, right? Because you're in something and a news event happened, or you had an anomaly. Like last week, you know, I had a day like that, right? You know, a $20,000 day. Because I was positioned and the market crashed, okay? So, but how often does a market crash? You know, you and I talk doom all the time because, you know, that's kind of the world we're in right now. But doom doesn't happen every day. You know, it's the anticipation of doom that everybody's waiting for. And so you have to trade in what I call a 2-sigma world versus a 6-sigma world. And a lot of people trade in a 6-sigma world and they constantly lose money because doom doesn't happen that week. So we just try to help people change their mental frame on this and then just make money every day. And every once in a while, you're going to get lucky and you're going to hit one out of the park. Okay. But just keep doing the right things all the time. And some days you get well rewarded.
Well, first of all, you said hitting 7 out of 10. So what is your win ratio for Trade Genius?
Yeah. So let me go in and look at it right here. As of today, and this is as of this morning, we are operating on 64.9% win rate, which is consistent. I think in my advertising, I put 65%. We're always just right around there.
Wow. Okay. That's amazing. Because yeah, if you were in Major League Baseball right now, you'd already be in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah. And we're our annualized gains, we annualize out at 113.74%. Now, that's a misnomer because that means you have to be 100% invested, okay? So, but if you're at least a 30% invested, which is reasonable, you know, you're looking at a 40% annualized return. And then, you know, just looking at the last week here, you know, the market's crashed, right? So one from 5 to 18. The last 15 trades we took, we had two losses.
Wow. How long are your people typically in the trades?
You know, most of the trades we're in, we average about 3 days.
Can I ask why so short?
Just because of the way the markets operate. If you were in a bull market, you can put a trade on and let it run. Okay, but we're in a bear market, and so you're basically counter trending a larger move, right? So the trend of the market is to keep selling down, but within that there are these what I call counter trend moves that are profitable. So we operate on a 4 hour is the time frame we like to trade. So we just look for those trades that are positive on the 4 hour. Our algorithm finds them. And the other thing we've done, Dave, is we've created a bot now for our clients too. So we take our entire watch list, we'll bot out to the people saying, hey, here's a trade that just showed up on our bot. So it's not even requiring me now to scan my watch list all the time. I have a bot doing it for me, and we push the trade out directly, and it's up to the client, you know, determine if that trade's suitable for them. So that's all we do. Yeah. But even in a bull market, you have algos trying to lift the market. We call this inside out algos, there's outside in algos. What I mean by that is that markets operate within a channel. And so when it's at the center of the channel, you have algos trying to push it back out to the edge, either up or down. And you got algos sitting at the edge of the channel trying to push that trade back in towards the middle. So, you know, even in a bull market, you know, you know, unless you want to hold it for long, long periods of time, you know, if you get a 3 or 4% move in a mark in a price of a stock over a couple day period of time, you jump it. Okay. And, you know, like last week, here's the trades. It's interesting. 0.14, 0.3, 0.1, 0.58, 0.25, 0.414, right? We had a minus 9%. I had a minus 13%. And I had a plus 19%. Okay. So, you know, those are, those things under 5% are more the norm. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes perfect sense to me.
And, you know, and it's up to you. This is just the stops I put in, you know, for just to prove the model. You know, I encourage people that are active, you immediately try to get your stock to break even, right? So you don't want to lose any money. I just put this out there just to show people the system works, okay?
You know, this reminds me, being a former college basketball coach, I got out just at the time analytics was coming in, and Analytics Today guides a lot of coaching decisions. And you are the analytic approach, as opposed to what I saw in most of my coaching career, and I did some of it too, the eyeball test. If it looked good, we go ahead and do it if we think it matches, and analytics were secondary. But analytics seems to be at the forefront of what you're doing.
Yeah, I mean, look, there's some art to this, but most of the trading is probability-based. You know, like we know over the last X amount of decades, September is a month that the market goes down. September is a month that oil energy goes up.
Yeah.
So why go long stocks and short energy,
right? I agree.
So you're making it harder on yourself. Now, does it always work out? Of course not. But you want to lean – you know, if you're flying an airplane, you want to fly into the wind, right? So, you know, you don't want to – why make it harder for yourself?
I agree.
So,
Bob, we are flat out of time. This is so interesting. It could go on another hour. This is fascinating. But I want to do due diligence here because people are going to say, well, tell me how to get in touch again. You went over it, and we'll put it in there again. Okay? TradeLikeAGenius.com is where you go. And you have until Saturday the 15th to take advantage of these specials for the non-bundled items. And the bundled items are pre-discounted. And the coupon code to get all of that is Columbus. So, Bob, this has been fascinating. Thank you so much for your insight. I feel better from just listening to you with all the doom and gloom.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you, Dave. And you guys have a good one. And, yeah, check us out, guys. I think you'll like what we do. And you'll learn a lot. And our goal is to equip you for lifetime skill.
Yeah, very good. Thanks, Bob.
All right, bye, Dave.
Take care.